a Birdificer creation.
Welcome to episode 148 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for December 2025. This is obviously the show covering the December 2025 news. I'm recording this on January 5th, 2026. So, Happy New Year, and let's get stuck in. As usual, let's begin with some follow-ups to stories we've covered before. And let's just get this out of the way right up top so we don't have to talk about it for the rest of the show. A little update from Trumplandia. The first story is a surprise to no one who understands how reality works. The fire people first, ask questions later approach of DOGE has backfired, and now the US government has realized they don't have the people with the skills needed to pay the bills, as it were. They don't actually have the technical chops to efficiently run a modern government. So, and maybe because they blotted their copybook to the point that no one wants to come back, I don't know. Either way, the solution to this problem is to create the US Tech Force. The idea here is that American tech companies will lend the US government technical leaders. So these people will remain the employees of their employer company, but will be seconded to the US government to run things on some sort of a temporary basis. Apple have decided that they will partake in this little exercise. Basically, it's a tax on corporations, as far as I can tell. You provide us the workforce we don't want to provide. You pay their pensions to pay the pensions we don't want to provide. Okay. But if we call it US Tech Force, then no one will complain. As someone who grew up as the child of a skilled worker who migrated from one country to another to bring their skills with them and help improve the local economy in the country they went to, this next story makes me extremely sad. Apple have talented workers from all over the world who hold visas to legally work in the United States. In theory, they have nothing to worry about whatsoever, and they can come to and from America at their heart's content. They can go home for Christmas, spend time with their families. That was something we always did when I was growing up. Very important. Only the problem is that things are so bad at the US border that there are massive backlogs processing people to make sure that they can prove they really are legal. Apple's legal team have basically said, yeah, don't go home for Christmas, because if you do, you're likely to end up locked up in a prison for a few days until we can prove that you definitely should be here. That is absolutely horrible. That is, frankly, it's welcome to communist China sort of territory here. For this to be the reality of the land of the free in 2026 or 2025 into 2026 is, I don't know how to process it. It just makes my brain hurt. It would have been unusable in fiction just a few years ago. And here we are. This is now normal. And also we have to mention the T word briefly, tariffs. This is one of those tariff news stories where it's actually about facts instead of just blowhard statements. So this is something that really happened. I'll just quote from Apple Insider. In a Federal Register filing on Tuesday, reports CNBC, the Trump administration confirmed it will take action against China under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974, and the response will be a tariff on semiconductors. However, rather than delay the actual tariff's implementation, the Trump administration is applying it immediately, but setting the rate of the additional tariff at zero. Instead, the Trump administration plans to increase the tariff level on June 23, 2027, effectively delaying the impact. So that is actually real. That is how tariffs are actually imposed. They get filed with this appropriate register and stuff. So this is a thing that has genuinely happened. Meanwhile, I didn't put this under the Trumplandia heading in the show notes because it isn't quite there. Apple were supporting US manufacturing anyway. They are now really, really being seen to do it. I'm not sure there's any evidence they've actually changed their actual plans. They're just making a much bigger show of it. But one of the things that they are doing to help drive manufacturing within the United States is the Apple Manufacturing Academy. And that did require people for our employees from companies making things in the States, particularly within Apple supply chain, to come to Apple to get their training. Well, now it is going nationwide because they have basically done it, made it online. So the Apple Manufacturing Academy is now offering online courses to staff in the various qualifying businesses around the United States. So that's only a good thing. You know, can't do any harm whatsoever. That is a good news story. And then also a good news story, Apple's rollout of digital IDs in the US is continuing apace. Story from the Mac Observer says Apple Wallet plans driver's license support in 7 additional states. So the new states are Connecticut, Kentucky, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Utah, Arkansas, and Virginia. And the story linked in the show notes is nice because it lists all the states that already have it, including the dates that arrived. And you really can see that this is now a slow and steady rollout. Regulatory rundown then. Well, before I go into this, let's just flag that there are actually more stories related to nations trying to regulate Apple. They're just down in the main stories section, but there's still some smaller stories to talk about here. So let us start in the European Union, where 2 more EU countries are taking issue with app tracking transparency. And as a European, I've already expressed my exasperation at this perversion of what the European Union is supposed to be about. We have excellent privacy regulations here by saying you can track people only if they give actual, genuine consent. That is now being spun as anti-competitive behavior because, well, clearly companies have a right to just spy on people without informed consent, regardless of what the GDPR says. I mean, it makes my head hurt how the same European Union can fetishize anti-competitive stuff so strongly that they forget their privacy stuff. Anyway, look, my brain cannot comprehend this idiocy, but it is continuing. And of all places, Germany, I do not expect this. Anyway, app tracking transparency under the gun by German antitrust investigators. Now, this isn't a finding yet, so maybe sanity will prevail in the Bundesrepublik. Germany's antitrust regulator is reviewing Apple's revised tracking rules after asking the company to address concerns about unequal treatment of third-party apps. The concept seems to be that Apple somehow don't follow their own rules, which I don't get because that little shaking hand icon is all over all of Apple's operating systems, where you're continuously saying, yep, you can indeed share that information, thank you. Meanwhile, the Italians are a step ahead of the Germans. They have fined Apple $115 million over app tracking transparency because, again, they make exactly the same claim, which I can't align that with my interpretation of reality. It makes no sense to me, but hey, here we are, $115 million fine. Okay. Next to Europe then, Switzerland opens an antitrust probe over the iPhone's NFC access. I'll be curious to see how that works out. And then finally, on both sides of the Atlantic, there is now a push for age verification. We've talked about it already in a few stories, and it is definitely continuing. No dramatic happenings in December, but just put a pin in these things because I think they're important to know that they're happening. The pressure is definitely continuing. In the United States, the App Store Accountability Act is making its way through the early stages of, through its early stages in Congress. I think it's heading towards committee. And that would mandate nationwide age checks on all mobile app stores. And in the UK, and this is again unverified reporting from the Financial Times, and I don't usually do unverified reporting, but the Financial Times have an immensely strong record at unverified reporting of what the UK government is up to when it comes to tech companies, because a lot of this stuff is done under the UK's Snoopers Charter, which allows the government to do it all in secret. And so you have to rely on unverified reporting from the Financial Times to actually get some democratic oversight in the United Kingdom. Anyway, all that said, it would appear that the UK government is getting ready to order Apple to do age verification before any nudity is displayed on an iPhone. I don't know how that will turn out, and this is all unverified reporting, so there's a thing probably happening. It may become a major story. Stick a pin in it. Now let's circle back to the United States, because on January 1st, there was supposed to be a very big change. In Texas, it was supposed to have become, on January 1st, illegal to use any app store on any phone without first proving to the government that you are, in fact, not to the government, to the manufacturer of the smartphone, or the provider of the operating system on the smartphone, to be exactly precise, that you are an adult before that smartphone can show you an app store. You can use an app store to download the Smurfs, something which absolutely does not need to prove you're an adult. Doesn't matter. Every single person in Texas was supposed to prove their age before they were allowed to download any app whatsoever. This seems a tad unconstitutional to my utterly untrained ears. And I am not alone. The law is on hold. It did not come into force because a judge has blocked the law because it probably isn't legal. So it's not squished. It's just not going to actually be applied until the legal proceedings against the law have proceeded. But the judge thinks there's a serious chance it's not going to pass muster, therefore an injunction. Because you don't just hand out an injunction if you think there's no chance of the problem with the law being serious. No, you hand out an injunction when you think there's a real chance this thing is going to be struck down in court. So the judge does, fingers crossed. Let's quickly look at some updates in Apple's services and original content over December. December is a time when 1 year finishes up and the next year is about to begin. So it's a time for looking back and that kind of thing. And Apple do this every year, and this year was no different. So Apple Music Replay 2025 is now live, so you can go back and see what you listened to. As part of Apple Music Replay, Apple have also released some charts so you can see what the most popular songs were, not just for you, but for other people in your country or around the world. You can do similar stuff on Apple Books, and Apple has also announced some winners of things. So the 2025 App Store Awards have been announced. I always think they're good to have a look at. I'm not going to go through them here because there's so many categories now. It's become, there's a lot of winners. But I always think it's interesting to learn something new. In fact, I find the nominations more interesting than the final winners because they're a bigger slate of apps to have a wee look-see at. Either way, link in the show notes to the list of winners. And an interesting and new award that I'm not sure I talked about other years is the Apple Podcasts Show of the Year went to The Rest is History. And that actually encouraged me to go read the blurb on the show, and I've subscribed. It's going to be on my to listen. I'm going to go start in the back catalogue and see what it's like. But it looks genuinely like an interesting history podcast. So that is actually on my, well, not on my Apple Podcasts app. Ironically, that is on Overcast. But hey. So that's Apple's little look back at 2025. Apple Pay is another one of these rollouts that's continuing, like the IDs, is Apple Pay, where it's tap to pay, not to make a payment. That's now pretty much ubiquitous across the entire planet. It's tap to pay for incoming transactions. And that rolled out to Ireland not that long ago. And I'm now starting to go to little pop-up coffee stands and stuff and just pay by going iPhone to iPhone or Apple Watch to iPhone, because all the vendor has is their iPhone. They don't need a terminal anymore. And it's really good for small businesses. So anyway, that is continuing to roll out around the world in December. That has, we have announcements about Singapore and Hong Kong. Apple Car Key then is another one of these slow sleeper features that is continuing to roll out. It is coming to Rivian, and Porsche is going to bring it to their two 2026 EV models. There is a rumor, which I haven't put in the show notes, but I will just flag that Tesla is about to follow suit. When that becomes an actual news story, I will include it in the show. Apple Fitness Plus is launching in some more countries just in time for New Year's resolutions, of course. Very clever. It's actually 28 new markets. And the reason it's such a big jump in the number of new markets is because Apple have done the work to translate the various workouts and things into extra languages, specifically Spanish, German, and Japanese. So, you know, by adding those three languages, that opens up so many more countries. Another, while we're mentioning Japan, messages via satellite has also launched in Japan. And I don't always do, I don't go anywhere near doing all the nominations that Apple stuff gets at various Film and Television Awards, because it would be, I'd need an entire show. And in fact, there are shows dedicated to such things. There are entertainment shows. This is, of course, an Apple News show. But it is worth noting that Apple TV's slow and steady rise is very much continuing. And the headline from Cult of Mac is Apple TV dominates Golden Globes race, eclipses Netflix and HBO in prestige TV. What that translates to is three of the six nominations in the coveted Best Drama TV Series category are with Apple. Now, nominations is not yet awards, so stay tuned. But nonetheless, for Apple to get more nominations than these existing big players like Netflix and HBO for the Best Series, Best Drama TV Series, that's interesting. Apple Arcade continues to launch stuff. Sneaky Sasquatch is what came along for the holidays. That is a very popular game that I don't understand because it's not aimed at me, but I think a lot of people will enjoy some Sneaky Sasquatch. And then finally, for Apple Health, Australians can start the new year by keeping an eye on their blood pressure, with hypertension notifications having received regulatory approval, and therefore we're expecting them to show up on actual Apple Watches any day now, although there is no official date announced as far as I can see. Still, getting the regulatory approval, obviously Apple wouldn't apply if they weren't going to bring out the feature. They now have their approval, so the feature is coming probably, I guess, in the next iOS update would be my guess. We have just three main stories for this December because it was a quiet enough news month. So first, we're going to go off to India for a thankfully failed attempt to become the first country in the world to succeed in forcing government apps to be pre-installed on all smartphones. Then we move on to where those regulatory stories that I didn't put in the regulatory rundown went. An eventful month for Apple's app stores. And then finally, we have a month of staffing changes at Apple, and some of them are planned transition, but not all of them. So some interesting stuff to get stuck into there. Our first main story then takes us to the Indian subcontinent, where the government has tried through secret orders to force all the major smartphone manufacturers to pre-install a government app that is ostensibly about preventing phone theft and SMEI cloning or faking. And that's not true, because that is actually a big problem in India. And it is something that the government have an app which is helping. It's called Sankar Sati. And the app is useful for people who choose to install it. However, the app is also an amazing tracking device, and not just a tracking device, but a remote kill switch, which is an immense power to put into government hands, because it connects actual identities to actual smartphones in the actual physical world, tracked with actual coordinates, and the ability to instantly silence any actual human. That is immense power to put in government hands, and to offer an app that people may choose to use if they trust the app is one thing. And in fact, the app appears apparently quite popular. But India tried to go a step further than that. Not just a step, one giant leap further than that. And they issued a secret order to the major smartphone vendors. That would be Apple, Samsung, Oppo, Vivo and Xiaomi, which I think covers the vast, vast, vast majority of handsets sold in India. And this is a secret order. So while the government have now admitted the order existed, we still haven't actually read the darn thing officially. So we're again relying on reporting. In this case, Reuters did the heavy lifting rather than the Financial Times. And again, Reuters is a trustworthy institution on these kind of things. So what's particularly galling about this is that the order wasn't just to pre-install this in all new phones. That would have been bad. It also said to prevent users from disabling or deleting the app. Again, bad, but not unexpected. The third one that I think shocked everyone was, oh yeah, and you need to push a software update to force the app on all existing phones as well. And you got to do all that within 90 days, apparently, as best as we can tell, based on Reuters reporting. That's quite dramatic. Again, nothing official from the companies, because they're under a secret government order. They can't officially comment on these things. However, various news sources soon had reports of how the companies were responding internally. And as best as we can tell, both Apple and Samsung gave the government a hard no. We are not going to do this. That's, you know, Apple and Samsung reportedly resist the order, I think is how that was put. But basically, it would appear that they basically said, too far, we're not going there. And if Apple and Samsung agree on something, then that's a big deal. And that would cause major problem for India's users, because the government would then be forced to ban all iPhones and Samsung phones in the entire country if these companies didn't play ball, which doesn't seem plausible. Also, opposition politicians were very quick to say, whoa, 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 this is police state stuff. Cybersecurity researchers were quick to say, whoa, the dangers here are huge. And civil liberties organizations obviously went, whoa, 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 government overreach, scary, 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 totalitarian state, yada, yada, yada. And again, I'm not saying the Indian government had ulterior motives, but they certainly asked for the ability to give themselves the power to execute on ulterior motives, which is, that's kind of dangerous, because elections happen in democracies, and when you give a government immense power, there can be an election which then ends up giving that immense power to someone you never thought would get that immense power. You always have to think ahead, what would happen if a government I didn't like won an election and suddenly had these powers, and then all of a sudden I'm not so fond of them? That's a thought experiment I think is often helpful. Anyway, this isn't a politics show, apologies. The good news is that in less than a week, the pressure from, I don't know which pressure it was, or maybe it was the sum total of all of the pressure, but either way, the relevant minister for communication felt the heat a little bit too strongly, and the secret order was withdrawn. So, for now, the threat has been abated. As a non-citizen of India, non-Indian person, person with no actual connection to India, obviously what happened within India would have had very little direct effect on me, and that's probably true of many of our listeners. So the Indian diaspora is like the Irish diaspora everywhere, so I'm sure there are listeners for whom this is actually very relevant. But actually I think it's a lot more relevant for a lot more of us than you may realise at first blush, because every government with authoritarian tendencies or certainly strongman desires around the world is looking to find a way to get their government app onto every smartphone. They all want it. Saudi Arabia wants it. Obviously, China would be delighted by such things. So if Apple were to have done this for India, or Samsung were to have done this for India, then it would not have been the end of the story. It would have been the start of a massive shift in the relationship between citizens, digital privacy, and governments, full stop, end of story. It would have been a very, very, very big story. So I think as a world citizen, I am a lot more relieved than at first blush you might think I should be that this has not succeeded. Our second main story then is that regulatory news we paused from earlier. A very eventful month in Apple's app stores. In fact, it's more than just regulatory news, because you may have noticed there was no legal latest section. That's because the one big story that would have ended up there has ended up in here too, because not only have we had more governments forcing third-party app stores, we also have developments in legal cases. So let's start with the regulatory changes. In this case, we have two additional regions where third-party app stores are a thing. And in both cases, that was paired with allowing external payment options for in-app purchases. So first, let's go to Japan, where we've talked about this for quite a bit, because Japan's Mobile Software Competition Act, MSCA, has been making its way through the process for a few years now. We've been following it as it went. And when last you left the story, the law had, you know, been signed, etc., and the regulations had been published, and Apple knew what they had to do, and they then had an amount of time to do it, and that amount of time ended with the end of the year. And so Apple made a big announcement about their changes. If you want a detailed overview, there's a very good link in the show notes to the Apple Insider story, which is, I think, gives you the gist and the headline. New third-party iOS app stores in Japan preserve user privacy and child safety. If you want a more detailed analysis, John Gruber does a good job of breaking down how this is very different to the EU's Digital Markets Act, the DMA, because the DMA is much more far-reaching. It's trying to do a lot more than just regulate the App Store. This is a much more finely tuned law aimed straight at mobile app stores, right? Mobile Software Competition Act, it says it in the name. Whereas the Digital Markets Act is like way broader. Interestingly, one of the most notable differences is that this law does not say that Apple cannot charge fees to developers who distribute their apps through third-party app stores. However, depending on your particular choice of how much or how little of Apple's services you choose to use for your app, your fees can vary between 26% on the high end. So the most a Japanese developer will pay is 26%, which is 4% better than we're used to hearing. And the least, which means if you take nothing from Apple apart from having your app notarized to protect everyone's safety, then your fee will be 5%. I don't speak Japanese, I don't read Japanese, so I don't have the fine-grained detail of exactly how the developer will be charged and how the billing will work and all that kind of thing. How and ever, this actually seems like Japanese developers may have ended up with a better deal by having a very finely tuned law as opposed to the DMA, which is a very far-reaching law covering everything from insurance markets to app stores to you name it, right? Digital markets, everything you sell online is covered by the DMA. It's interesting. Now, what is not particularly interesting, as in utterly, utterly, utterly predictable, Epic Games, even though they could go from 30% to 5% of fees, nope, they're not happy. Of course they're not happy. As Apple Insider put it, Epic CEO slams Japanese App Store junk fees, with junk fees as a quotation from Mr. Sweeney, who is the CEO of Epic Games. Yeah, okay, colour me surprised. So it seems like the Japanese consumers have gotten a nice deal here if they wish to go out to the App Store. I continue to have zero interest, by the way, in going outside the App Store, because I see the walled garden as a feature, not a bug, because there is enough of my digital life where I'm the person who has to worry about keeping myself safe. I actually am happy to outsource it on my mobile phone, but it is a choice, and I guess it's probably a good thing that for Europeans and Japanese, and as we're about to see, Brazilians, it is a choice. Just a choice I'm not going to make. Right, so segueing to the other country where Apple have made a change. And this one is not yet as official. Apple don't have a press release, for example. But there has been a long-running case by Brazil's antitrust authorities against Apple trying to force third-party app stores. And it's been through the Brazilian courts. And it's been quite a story that's been rumbling away in the background for not just this year, but years plural. And it would have, according to reporting, a deal has been reached, which is going to end all of these shenanigans. The original sources with the report are in Portuguese, and my Portuguese is terrible. Probably not quite as bad as my Japanese, but not great. So either way, the bottom line is, I can't tell you for sure what it says, so I'm going to have to go on the reports of the reports. Based on what I have been able to see, which is not very much, we don't really have fine-grained details other than that this agreement covers both third-party app stores and external payment options. I am sure details will emerge once this apparent agreement becomes an actually signed, sealed, and delivered legally binding agreement, and at that point we'll have all the facts and figures, etc. Transitioning then to the United States, we've already seen Epic Games show up criticizing the Japanese changes. They haven't yet criticized the Brazilian ones, presumably because the details haven't been announced yet. But of course they have their very dramatic case against Apple in the United States, which kicked off the whole shenanigans. And where last we left that story, Apple had, so Epic Games won sorry, Epic Games lost 10 out of the 11 aspects of their case against Apple. The only thing Epic Games won is that the judge ruled that Apple's fees were too high and it was anti-competitive, and Apple had to reform their fees, and Apple did so in the letter but not the spirit of the law, to the point that it was so unspirited that the judge in the case, Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers, ruled Apple in contempt. And because Apple were so in contempt, and they also, we had Apple executives lie under oath and stuff like that, it was pretty scandalous, to be perfectly honest. Apple did not look good in that case. Apple were found to be in contempt, and the remedy, Judge Gonzalez-Rogers decided, for that contempt was to remove or to suspend all fees for third-party in-app payments in the US App Store. That was a big deal. Apple were very cranky, so Apple appealed the injunction for their contempt of court. So that's the appeal that was happening. That appeal now has been heard by a three-panel judge in the US Ninth Circuit of Appeals. And it's actually a very nuanced ruling with a lot of detail. But when you put it all together, it rather looks like Apple are the losers here. Not complete, total, and utter losers, but definitely not the winners. So the three judges agreed with Judge Gonzalez-Rogers that Apple violated the anti-steering injunction she placed on them by setting the commission on external in-app payments at 27%. So they agreed with the contempt finding that resulted in the blocking of all commissions. However, the judges disagreed with the remedy. The answer isn't zero commission. They agree the answer isn't lob 3% off and call it done. But the answer also isn't zero commission on third-party in-app payments. Apple can charge something, but it needs to be a reasonable something. Now, rather than the court deciding on what is reasonable, or even setting it a clear test that I could see based on reporting, I haven't read the whole judgment. Rather than doing that, the panel ordered that Apple propose a new fee structure, and Epic must then agree that it is fair before Apple can start collecting commissions. Predictably, surprising absolutely no one, especially not me, Epic have said that anything more than zero is too much. So this would appear to be gridlocked again. So yes, Apple can say that the actual finding of zero has been overturned. However, their contempt hasn't been, and they're still not allowed to charge anything until they can come to some sort of an agreement with Epic, which I think means they're not going to be able to charge something forever and ever and ever, amen, because I don't see them coming to any kind of agreement. Okay, forever and ever, amen is probably too long, but I don't think anything's going to happen very quickly. Way less dramatic than any of this, but might be a little slow burner. This is one of those put a pin in it stories. There has been a judgment in Europe relating to the App Store. Now, this is one of those ones where Europe as a big picture entity and specific European countries all sort of get confused. And it's confusing to everyone, not just people who are not Europeans, but anyway, even to Europeans, this can be a little confusing. So the Dutch antitrust authorities want to charge Apple damages for the effects the App Store rules have had on competition. And Apple said, no, we're under the EU here. You little Hollands don't get to do these kind of things. The EU has to do that. And they went up to an EU court. And the EU court was like, no, you're a member, the Netherlands are a member of Europe. So yeah, that case can proceed. And so that case is now going to proceed. That case may result in Apple not having to pay any damages. That doesn't seem hugely likely. But it does, it may or may not end up being a lot. And regardless, it's going to take quite some time to happen. And when it does, Apple will, of course, appeal it, I am sure. So, again, one to put a pin in, nothing particularly immediate happening here. The immediate is that two more countries have third-party app stores on iOS, that being Japan and probably Brazil. So Japan has it, Brazil probably has it. Our third and final story, then, is a month of staffing changes at Apple. Basically, the Apple HR department have had a very busy month. Some of it, the result of their own careful planning and, you know, orderly transitions that were put in place. The what I thought was going to be the most dramatic HR story of the month was that John Giandrea's slow motion departure from Apple has come to its end. In a very quiet way. So John Giandrea was hired in from Google as an expert on AI, artificial intelligence. And he has been leading the research at Apple, and I would argue has been doing so very effectively. Apple's AI research is by far the most open department within Apple, actually publishing academic papers, which is really unusual for Apple. And they're doing really interesting work. Where Giandrea has failed spectacularly is in productizing the research. And Apple is a product company, which means that his inability to turn theory into practice has resulted in the most amount of egg on Apple's face in a very long time, with the delay of Better Siri. That is spectacularly embarrassing for Apple. And that, I'm sorry to say, I think it is fair to lay at John Giandrea's feet, and that certainly is what Bloomberg's reporting from behind the scenes has been saying has been going on. So, shortly after a very critical leak out of Bloomberg, via Mark Gurman in Bloomberg, John Giandrea was removed from product. He was basically said, yeah, you're the research guy and the research guy only. And I think everyone sort of assumed that that was part one of a gentle nudging out. You know, Apple didn't want to cause a stink, especially with the egg all over their face already about Siri. They didn't want to look like they were flailing or panicking, so they made careful changes. And I don't think any of us expected John Giandrea to be with Apple for all that much longer. Part of me was slightly surprised he made it the whole way to the end of the year. Either way, he is going to retire from Apple. He's being replaced by Amar Subramania, who has spent, firstly, he was 16 years with Google, and then he briefly popped over to Microsoft for a year, and now he's over with Apple. And the way everyone is interpreting that is, when you've come from a place like Google, which has a very blue skies sort of approach to things, and you go to a place like Microsoft, which has a very, very corporatist view of things, it was probably a bad culture fit. And I think that's probably why he wants to go to Apple, where I think blue sky's thinking is much more encouraged. So hopefully he will prove to be an effective executor at Apple. Either way, he is Apple's new VP of AI. I've linked in the show notes to some interesting opinion and analysis. Obviously, lots and lots and lots of people were saying, oh, Giandrea is terrible, terrible, terrible. Yay, delighted he's gone. Brilliant for Apple. This is amazing. I'm not sure they're going as far as this is amazing, but yeah, I think the general feeling was about time. He's been a disaster. And again, I don't think that extremist reaction is fair, because in terms of the research stuff, I actually think he's been doing a very good job. Unfortunately, the productization has fallen flat on its face, and that, I think, is his fault ultimately as he was vice president of AI. So when AI Siri failed, that's the vice president's problem. I'm going to mention an interesting article on Apple Insider specifically. Apple owes its greatest strength in AI to Giandrea. And that is a very different take to a lot of the articles you'll read, but actually, read it, I would suggest. I'm going to spoil it. What Giandrea brought to Apple, and I am delighted he did, and I hope to goodness the lesson is remembered, is on-device processing. Why is Apple's AI so privacy first? It's because Giandrea was a big pusher of on-device processing, and Apple have figured out how to do that extremely efficiently. So that is genuinely a strength Giandrea has given to Apple. So bear that in mind when weighing him up in the balance of, was he terrible or was he brilliant? You know, he was both, I guess. And a good analysis over in Six Colors, Apple's new AI chief has his work cut out for him. I mean, it's not auga auga, the sky is falling, but it is like, yeah, he's got a job to do. He's got quite a job to do. And again, just to underline the point, Apple are not they have egg on their face with AI, but they're not nowhere with AI. So we got a report earlier in December that Apple continued to publish interesting AI research. So Apple's AI and ML research paper show instant 3D image conversion and more, details over in the Apple Insider article. It's good academic research into really cool applications of artificial intelligence and machine learning. And OpenAI released ChatGPT sort of integrations for app submissions to developers. And on day one, who was ready to go but Apple, with integrations that were in there in the integration-y app story thing over at OpenAI the day it launched. They were launch partners. So again, Apple are doing stuff in AI. It's just the Siri thing is bad. And again, that was a planned-ish transition. No, that was a planned transition. It was, you know, arguably on January 1st, the minute had been planned, but certainly by now it was very much planned, very carefully choreographed and executed. Again, also carefully choreographed and executed are two other departures. One of them makes me a little bit sad. So Apple has announced the departure of both general counsel and environmental chief. The environmental chief would be Lisa Jackson, who I was very fond of. Anyway, I will quote from the Apple press release. Apple said on Thursday that its general counsel, Catherine Adams, and vice president of environment policy, social initiative, Lisa Jackson, would both be stepping down next year. The two will be replaced by, I'm quoting Six Colors, my apologies. The two will be replaced by a single executive, Jennifer Newstead, who recently served as Meta's chief legal officer. Newstead was legal advisor to the U.S. Department of State during part of Trump's first term in the White House. She also previously worked in the White House as associate counsel in the George W. Bush administration and subsequently served as general counsel of the Office of Management and Budget. Newstead will not head up environmental and social initiatives. Those will instead transfer to newly installed Chief Operating Officer Sahib Khan. So someone certainly not hostile to the Trump administration is coming in on all the legal stuff. If one puts on one's hat of Apple is a publicly traded company and must protect shareholder value, that is immensely clever. Giving this person with this person's background the environment role would undermine Apple's commitment to the environment. And Apple have very carefully preserved their commitment to the environment, even throughout the second Trump term. So moving that over to operations officer Sahib Khan makes all the sense in the world, because actually protecting the actual environment we live in is very much operations side of things. It shouldn't be legally pretending you have. It should be actually carrying it out for reals. And so putting that under the COO, I'm not against. And it doesn't make me happy to see a Trump loyalist appointed as a chief policy person within Apple, but, well, needs must when fortune vomits in your kettle, as Blackadder would have put it. So, again, planned. You know, these are transitions, carefully choreographed, no surprises here, nothing dramatic, very boring, in fact, just a company working through needed staffing changes over time as people come and people go. And then there was Apple's little Christmas surprise. Late in December, the Vice President of Human Interface and Design, Alan Dye, left Apple to lead Meta's design team. And he didn't do it in an organized way, because he apparently surprised the absolute heck out of everyone inside Apple. It basically appeared on LinkedIn. Or was it a press release? Either way, Apple, it didn't come from Apple, and Apple were blindsided by it, apparently, according to reporting. He is being replaced by an Apple veteran who's been in the design team for a very long time, Steve LeMay. And this is one of those interesting things where Apple didn't plan this, but it may end up being the best thing that happened to Apple from a staffing point of view for the whole of 2025. So John Gruber has quite a few little birdies within Apple, and those little birdies were all chirping the same tune into John Gruber's ear. The designers within Apple, who've been there for a long time, who have experienced that design is not just how it looks, it's how it works. And they're, firstly, delighted to see the back of Dye. there is a lot of reporting that he scoffed at the interaction people who were worried about, you know, the actual stuff that makes a UI usable and was just fascinated with how it looked. And so seeing him go was actually really popular within the team. He was seen as very disheartening to people who actually care about the actual design part of user interface design, as opposed to the painting a layer of makeup on it. They were delighted, but they were double delighted because LeMay, his replacement, is extremely respected. He, the employees working under him are extremely fond of him. They believe he is really good at his job. They believe he will do a fantastic job of leading Apple design efforts. So basically, I'll quote from Gruber summing up of his little birdies. The sentiment within the ranks in Apple is that today's news is almost too good to be true. Cult and Mac have additional reporting from their own little birdies that backs up Gruber's birdies. And of course, there's a lot to opinionize over here. I will call out some articles I found useful. Cult of Mac focused on looking at LeMay. So meet Apple's new UI chief, the man Steve Jobs called Margaret. The problem was there were too many Steves in the room, so Steve just decided to call him Margaret. No particular reason why Margaret, that's been lost to history, but there we have it. A lot of people then assumed that, yay, Alan Dye is gone, therefore Liquid Glass is going to roll back. No, it isn't. And I'm one of those people who see Liquid Glass as a glasses half full sort of a thing, because even though I don't think Alan Dye had much to do with it, it actually has some really, really nice actual usability improvements. So the look of it needs work, needs to be toned down, needs to avoid the bits where you can't read the darn thing. But in terms of buttons morphing from one into another, the liquid part of Liquid Glass is actually a real step forward. When you would delete a photograph in the Photos app, for example, which I do a lot because I shoot lots and then cull them back, it used to be that you tapped the delete icon and then you had to move your thumb completely to the middle of the screen to confirm. So you were down, up, down, up, down, up. With Liquid Glass, you click delete, the delete button transforms very pleasingly into the confirm button. So you go tap, 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 tap. It's so much easier. The morphing liquid part of Liquid Glass I am finding wonderful. The glass part needs fine-tuning. I don't think it's awful. I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't dislike it, but it definitely needs work. And the analysis from people whose opinion I find credible and who have a history of being insightful in these things is that no, Alan Dye's departure doesn't mean Liquid Glass is going anywhere. In fact, I'm now quoting the headline from Apple Insider, which is one of the pieces I would recommend reading. I thought it was some fun takes. In a major coup for someone, Alan Dye leaves Apple is how the story was designed. It was described at Six Colors. I think the snarkiest thing I heard was that the IQ of both companies has increased. It doesn't say much for people's opinion of Meta. A very interesting insight from Cult of Mac. The real reason Meta poached Apple's UI design chief is the headline they put on the article. I'm going to again spoil it for you. He led Vision Pro. And you know something? Even though the hardware is still overpriced and over heavy, over uncomfortable, and over not available in many parts of the world, the UI is widely considered to be the best UI out there in these headsets, and a lot of it is being imitated by other companies' headsets. So one of those other companies very interested in those headsets is Meta. So actually, it does make sense to bring the person who led the Vision Pro team over to Meta. So I thought that was an interesting take, given all the negativity flying around. And then a few days after the Alan Dye surprise departure, the rumour mill spun right up again. I went, oh yeah, and that John Cerugi guy who you see in all the keynotes talking about all their amazing chip work with his fun accent, who's really cool looking, yeah, he's about to sod off too. And that was squished very quickly by a letter to his entire department. No, I'm going nowhere. So Johnny Cerugi will remain the Senior Vice President of Hardware Technologies, a.k.a. the chip guru at Apple. That's a good thing, because if John Cerugi had left, that would have worried me. Not worried me existentially, oh my God, Apple is doomed. No, that would always have been an overreaction. That would not have been good. Alan Dye leaving makes me happy. I want more of the glass, less of the liquid. No, other way around. More of the liquid, less of the glass. Anyway. a lot of interesting opinion analysis I could link to here. I'm just going to link to two stories. A nice little rundown from Cult of Mac of just what's going on. The four top executives who ditched Apple joined Meta in 2025, according to Cult of Mac's thinking about these things. That would be obviously Alan Dye. That is significant. Then there was also Ruming Pang, who was an AI models architect. Jian Zhang, who was a robotics research pioneer. And Qi Yang, who was a search and reasoning specialist. And you can see why Apple would... It's not good for Apple to lose any of those last three people. And you can see why Meta would want those last three people. And like I say, I think I understand why they want Alan Dye. It's the Vision Pro. And also, it's kind of a big name to say, we got the Apple design lead. The fact that you got the least good Apple design lead, and as long as I can remember there being any, is beside the point. You got an Apple design lead, so you can put a big star on your CV. And then the other story I love, because it is the best headline of the month. This is just, of all the headlines I read all month, this one made me laugh the most. Dozens of staffers quit Apple, leaving behind only 164,000. That is the headline from the Apple Insider. Their subhead is, Apple Park does not have a big exit sign on it. And their conclusion, I think, sums it up. They justify their arguments very well. It's a very reasonable article. A nice little bit of sanity amidst all of the sky is falling reporting. The only thing we can learn from LinkedIn and the many reports of departures is that people move around in the industry. Yeah, that's how the tech industry works. There is churn of employees. So, you know, I think if you think, oh my God, this has been terrible, on the whole, it's good to get a little perspective. The Apple Insider article helps with that. And I would say, on the whole, some well-executed managed transitions, they seem like good news stories to me. I am of the opinion that Apple accidentally looked their way into their best staffing change of the whole year when Alan Dye voluntarily sod it off. So on the whole, I think this is actually a very good news story. Finally then, let's wrap up this end of year, start of year show with some other quick stories that made the news in December 2025. We had the release of the Apple OS 26.2 variants. For the most part, little quality of life improvements, right? iOS 26.2 is here with one-time AirDrop codes, alarms and reminders and more, is how Apple Insider summed it up. iPadOS 26.2 brings better split view AirDrop codes to iPad. Again, all these summaries are from Apple Insider. They just did the best summaries. New Edge Light and Urgent Reminders come to macOS Tahoe. Sleep scores sharpen and EU Wi-Fi setup shifts in watchOS 26.2. That last phrase is doing a little bit of heavy lifting there. And we should dig a little deeper into that. In the EU, newly paired Apple Watches will no longer automatically learn all the Wi-Fi networks paired iPhones have access to. And users are going to need to explicitly add the networks they actually want to send over to the watch. This is because in order to comply with the Digital Markets Act, Apple can't do something for their watch that they won't allow third-party watches to do. And when you think about protecting user privacy, I do not want my iPhone to send all the Wi-Fi networks I know to any random third-party watch. Thank you very much. Keep that safe. So while this new approach is a very minor inconvenience, if you're restoring a watch from backup, not going to happen. And of course, as you add networks, it sort of takes care of itself. So I don't think this is going to be this isn't a major deal. Let's just be frank. It just isn't a big deal. It's mildly inconvenience, and it is interesting because this is the first time the Digital Markets Act has resulted in the removal of an existing feature rather than simply delaying the rollout of new features, perhaps indefinitely for some features. Finally then, tvOS 26.2 brings Kids Mode to the Apple TV app. If you're wondering what Kids Mode is, it's profiles that are not linked to an Apple ID, perfect for kids. I don't think they're actually branded as such within the app's UI, but that's what they are darn useful for. And then finally, Shazam, which Apple have owned for some time but not rebranded, has gotten a new feature. The headline Cult of Mac put on it is actually quite revealing because I think it cuts to the core here. Shazam unlocks what makes chart-topping songs unforgettable. What they've done is added a popular segments feature. So not just which songs are people Shazamming, but which bits of which songs, which tells you what the bits are that are the earworms. So what is it that's getting stuck in people's heads? So I thought that was very interesting. That brings us to the end of another month's worth of Apple news, and indeed another year's worth of Apple news. You will find detailed show notes with links to all of the stories that informed my thinking at letstalk.ie. And as usual, there are links there to support the show. People who support the show on Patreon, which is one of the two ways of supporting the show, get some members-only stuff. Don't know, it's not exciting members-only stuff like you get on some shows where you might have ad-free versions, because hey, there are no ads here, so giving people an ad-free feed is not a bonus. That's the norm, because you amazing folks support this site so that I can do ad-free, sponsor-free, therefore utterly, utterly unencumbered content, and I really, really, really do appreciate that. So anyway, all of you supporters, thank you, thank you, thank you. You can support the show on Patreon, you can support the show on PayPal, but those of you who choose to support on Patreon get a very small bonus extra in the form of digital greetings cards from me, which show off some of my fun photography. But actually the most important part is I issue a letter to supporters of the show every year as we change from one year to the other, sort of under the hood. How is this thing actually running behind the scenes? Not at a technical level, but on an organizational level. Like, you know, I say that the aim here is to break even. This is not my career. I have a career. I just need this to pay for itself. And so how's that going? How's all that working out? All of that kind of stuff I talk about in much more detail to the supporters whom are providing that financial support than I do here on the air. So if you're curious about those kind of things, hey, why not become one of those Patreon supporters in 2026? Like I say, it is because of your support that this show continues to exist. Okay, I think it's important for me to say I wish you all an extremely happy new year. I hope you have a healthy, joy-filled and fulfilling 2026, and hopefully you spend some of it listening to my shows and perhaps consider supporting my podcast during the year. I've been your host, Bart Bouchot. You can find me at bartb.ie, and until next time, happy computing.